The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Georgene Rice Show podcast. This program was originally broadcast live on 93.9 KPDQ. We hope you enjoy the show.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to the Friday edition of the Georgene Rice Show. Glad to have you with us. James Blend is producing, Clark Hilton Engineering. Dan Rice, he's given up his office for the sake of the cause. Today, we're going to take a look at the lighter side of the news in addition to the headlines from the last couple of days. And we'll share an interview of the week with Ron Price. Play nice in your sandbox at home. How to enjoy peaceful relationships with the important people in your life. We have a couple of breaking news stories. Governor Brown said that if she doesn't see improvement in slowing the spread of COVID-19 across the state, she's going to implement more restrictions. During a press conference this morning, she threatened that the restrictions could be on businesses like bars and restaurants, as well as travelers coming in from hotspots. She said she's considering adding the restrictions by the end of the month, but there's no hard line for that date. We're doing well, but we have to do better, she said. We're on the right track. Now we need to step on the gas. That's a quote from the Oregon Health Authority, the director, Patrick Allen, during that same press conference. Well, the state epidemiologist, Dr. Dean Seidlinger, he also spoke at the press conference outlining various scenarios over the next 4 weeks. He said all the modeling shows we are headed in the right direction. Oregonians have flattened the curve again, but we are still months away from driving infection rates to levels where we can open schools. We're not close to keeping the infection rate at a level we need to open schools across the state. Well, Seidlinger said the most important data point on how many people an infected person passes the infection on to. Right now, that number is 1. The state's goal is to reduce that number to 0.75. Well, last Thursday afternoon, the governor updated the state's coronavirus county watch list. The big changes in that list are the Marion County and Wasco counties no longer on it. Multnomah County remains, however. Being on the watch list lets the state prioritize resources and help increases monitoring, deploys more technical assistance and other things. There are now 8 counties on that watch list. And in addition to Multnomah, there's Baker, Hood River, Jackson, Jefferson, Malheur, Morrow, and Umatilla. Well, Oregon students from kindergartners to high school seniors will not see the inside of a classroom or receive in-person instruction unless the state can substantially curb the spread of COVID-19 in the next 200 days, Governor Brown also said. The state has essentially flattened the rate of infection and test positivity, but the governor said Oregon has yet to begin trending downward as of the latest Oregon Health Authority update. 5.4% of tests are coming back positive, and the state is seeing an infection rate of 50 per 100,000. Unfortunately, it's still not enough, she says. Our infection rate is still too high to get our kids safely back into the classroom in most of our schools this fall. Well, in other news, the DNC convention ended with the presidential nominee accepting that nomination. Not surprisingly, President Trump apparently watching Wednesday night and Thursday when his predecessor, former President Barack Obama, launched a blistering attack on the current commander-in-chief in a speech during the third night of the convention. He, of course, had to respond. He spent much of his nearly 4 years in office trying to undo Obama's major policy moves. He hit back at the former president in real time on Twitter. "He spied on my campaign and got caught," the president wrote midway through Obama's speech. A few minutes later, he tweeted, "Why did he refuse to endorse Slow Joe until it was all over? And even then, it was very late. Why did he try to get him not to run?" Well, in his speech, Obama charged that during Trump's tenure, the president has shown no interest in putting in the work, no interest in finding common ground, no interest in using the awesome power of his office to help anyone but himself and his friends, end quote. Well, as for Trump's handling of the coronavirus pandemic and the virus effects on the nation's economy, Obama argued that the consequences of this failure are severe. 170,000 Americans dead, millions of jobs gone, while those at the top take in more than ever. It's rather interesting how they can breathtakingly blame that on an administration without making any reference to China in the process. Meanwhile, Chris Wallace says Obama showed his contempt for Trump in the curious DNC speech and media buzz. He stole the show. Harris unloaded on structural racism during her speech, accepting her role as his vice presidential running mate. And Mr. Kushner, he ripped lecturing moralists at the DNC, saying Trump has been cleaning up messes left by Obama. Alexei Navalny, a top critic of Russian President Vladimir Putin, was allegedly poisoned during a flight from Siberia to Moscow and has since been hospitalized. The Economist magazine's Russia editor said the plane made an emergency landing about halfway into the flight, citing his press secretary. The Kremlin did not immediately issue a statement. The Daily Beast reported that Mr. Navalny's press secretary said that he was poisoned with some kind of toxin and was unconscious. We assume that Alexei was poisoned with something mixed into his tea. That was the only thing he drank this morning. The doctors say that the toxin was absorbed more quickly because of the hot liquid. Right now, he is unconscious, according to reports, and his condition had been deteriorating. Russian authorities raided the office of Mr. Putin's opponent, the leader, Mr. Navalny, and Russia carrying out mass raids against supporters of the opposition leader as well. Meanwhile, the president has addressed QAnon for the first time. I heard that these are people that love our country, he said. And Warren's kid block background spelled out almost hidden message in her convention speech, Black Lives Matter. DNC MC Kerry Washington praised hugely diverse black community following Biden's gaffe, and Cincinnati Reds suspended their announcer, Tom Brenneman, after anti-homosexual slur was heard on the air. Well, the U.S. has ended an agreement with Hong Kong, which says it is a pawn, and Qantas expects global travel won't resume until mid-2021. And Judge Judy has filed a $22 million complaint against talent agency over a series, over the profit of the series she is the feature in. Well, Goodyear is facing some backlash after banning Blue Lives Matter, exclusively promoting Black Lives Matter. That's what we've gotten down to, the kind of pettiness. Well, from the story, a Goodyear employee at a plant in Topeka, Kansas, shared a slide that he said came from the company's corporate office in Akron, Ohio. The slide reported by WIBW showed two categories, acceptable and unacceptable. Under acceptable were Black Lives Matter and lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender pride. Under unacceptable were Blue Lives Matter, All Lives Matter, MAGA, and politically affiliated slogans or materials. Goodyear denies this is their policy, but didn't explain why it appears that it is. The company saw shares tumble 6% after Trump tweeted to boycott the company. Another story takes a look at the many big companies that have given in to current political movements and campaigns to defund the police. Well, Netflix is promoting a series that sexualizes preteen girls. I suppose that shouldn't be altogether shocking, but this one goes a step further than many before it have. From the Netflix description of the story of 11-year-old Amy, eager to escape her family's simmering dysfunction, Amy, through an ignited awareness of her burgeoning femininity, propels the group to enthusiastically embrace an increasingly sensual dance routine, sparking the girls' hope to twerk their way to stardom at a local dance contest. Well, Lila Rose points out this is the outright promotion of pedophilia. How is this legal? Why are you depicting and encouraging the sexualization of little girls? Bethany Mandel points out our culture is so deeply and irrevocably broken. I don't know about the irrevocable part, but it certainly is broken. Well, the ratings for the Democratic convention sank even lower, now off by 42% from 4 years ago, not surprisingly under our current circumstance. But the Portland rioters set fire to buildings. Police begged them not to, and it turns out they didn't respect the begging. And who refused to make a cake criticizing her lifestyle? Jack Phillips explains how they're similar and notes one important difference. A cake maker from Supreme Court decision backs a lesbian cake maker. April has received public praise for her decision to abide by her conscience. The interview with Today was very supportive and encouraging, and all the mainstream media that has covered her story has affirmed her decision to not express a message that she didn't agree with. Jack Phillips didn't get that same courtesy when he declined to bake a cake for a same-sex couple. An Iowa State University professor is threatening to discipline students who oppose abortion. The professor also said there will be no arguments against gay marriage or Black Lives Matter. And the Denver City Council has voted against replacing police with peace force. But Jazz Shaw explains some who voted against it just felt it was rushed. You're not out of the water yet, Denver. Hey, you're listening to The Georgene Rice Show. We're going to take a break. When we turn, we'll take a look at some of the lighter side of the news.
You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show podcast. It's aired on 93.9 KPDQ.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show. We're going to spend a little time taking a look at the lighter side of the news. And to help me do that is James Blend, who's typically the producer of today's program. You've been out on vacation for the last couple of days. Are you refreshed and ready to go?
It was a vacation with a 5-year-old, so no, I'm as tense
you
as ever.
If to recover.
If nothing else, a vacation from my vacation would be immensely joyous. Although, this was the week my family and I were supposed to be at Disneyland as under original plans, and I'm sure that I would need an even longer vacation from that vacation because as enjoyable as it is, Disneyland with a 5-year-old. Just saying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're going to take some time off next week. Maybe you can catch up. Did you watch any of the DNC convention?
No, I respect myself.
Well, you know, watching any convention, especially a virtual convention, has to be a little bit painful. You don't have the excitement of the delegates who are all in one location. So it is something of an infomercial, and, it's a challenging thing to do. Now, the Republicans were very critical of how the DNC did it. We'll see how they do it under our current coronavirus standards. But one of the things that I think really stood out was sort of a repeat of what happened to Hillary Clinton in the 2016 presidential debate. A fly graced her forehead during the presidential debate. And a special guest buzzed its way into Mike Bloomberg's speech on Thursday night as the former New York City mayor was in the middle of slamming President Bush during the Democratic National Convention. Well, in the midst of attacking the president, what appeared to be a fly landed on his face at least once above his right eye and once under his nose. Now, what do? Do you just pretend like it's not there? Do you swat it? What do? Well, wrote one reporter, the star of the DNC is the fly that keeps landing on Bloomberg's face. Another tweeted, the fly that attacked Bloomberg should run for mayor of New York City. Another said the Bloomberg fly is truly the all-star of the DNC. Well, Bloomberg, a successful businessman, ducked out of the Democratic primary shortly after picking up a small amount of delegates on Super Tuesday. He wasn't the only politician to encounter buzzing interruptions during the high-profile event. As I mentioned, former Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton, she famously saw a black fly land between her eyes during one of her debates against then-candidate Donald Trump. Either she or Bloomberg had swatted that fly, they may have faced scrutiny from the animal rights activists that, like former President Obama did. After Obama swatted a fly in 2009, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals dubbed it an execution. So you can't win for losing if you're a politician and you do anything that a normal person would do under similar circumstances. So that was one of the highlights of at least that portion of the DNC convention that probably won't be forgotten. Another was the calamari comeback, the tiny estate. The DNC's video is getting something of a buzz. Rhode Island is always finding a way to get its tiny tentacles onto the national stage, and it made for a memes moment. Sandwiched between other states, calls to fight poverty and end racial injustice, a lawmaker and a restaurateur with a heaping plate of sautéed squid stood on a beach and proclaimed Rhode Island the calamari comeback state at the virtual Democratic National Convention. This was a 30-second spot. It aired on Tuesday night during the convention's roll call as Rhode Island's Democrats formally nominated Joe Biden for president. Was an instant social media sensation. Rhode Island trended for hours overnight on Twitter. Americans, including some Rhode Islanders, didn't seem to know quite what to make of the calamari cameo. But nonetheless, the backstory is Joseph McNamara, who chairs the state Democratic Party and appeared in that video, lobbied successfully in 2014 to make calamari Rhode Island's official state appetizer. And so it was a reference to the state's appetizer. Does Oregon have a state appetizer? What would that be?
I don't know if we have a state appetizer. That's a question. It's interesting to think of what it would be.
Among the pantheon of appetizers,
clam chowder?
Well, that's not really an appetizer.
No, I mean, people...
I don't know. Fried cheese? I don't know.
Yeah, I'll have to look and see if we have an official one or not.
Well, we had an announcement earlier in the day from Governor Brown saying schools will not open until a nearly impossible goal is reached. Well, a university in Germany is offering idleness grants to Germans willing to abstain from activity as part of research for an exhibition on sustainability. They're going to pay $1,900 grants for doing nothing. Really? Well, the University of Fine Arts in Hamburg said three people will receive the grant for doing nothing and be paid $1,900 to engage in a specific form of active inactivity. That's what they're calling it. Well, the school said applicants are free to choose their own form of idleness, an activity to abstain from, and a panel of school officials will choose the three best pitches. Doing nothing isn't very easy, says the architect and design theorist who designed the program. Huh, and they're paying him, apparently. We want to focus on active inactivity. If you say you are not going to move for a week, then that's impressive. If you propose you are not going to move or think, that might be even better. Well, von Borges, who's the architect of this whole thing, said the period of inactivity is up to the applicant. If you say you're not going to sleep, then you can only do that for a couple of days. But if you say that you're not going to shop, then that's something else you can sustain for a longer period. Now, the point of it all isn't altogether clear. Active inactivity. This scholarship program, they say, is not a joke, but an experiment with serious intentions. How can you turn a society that is structured around achievements and accomplishments on its head? I'm not sure this particular exercise is going to answer that question, but nonetheless, $1,900 in Germany to do absolutely nothing. Are you applying, James?
I believe the phrase "Ich bin ein Hamburger" is what I want to go with here, because yeah, that you know, I have many relatives in my recent past who are of German descent, so I see no reason not to. Well, maybe spend a little extended time in the motherland, as it were, and do nothing.
So what would you abstain from doing? You have to select something that you're not going to do.
I'm open to not doing anything.
Just going to cover the whole gamut.
By the way, just to revisit our previous topic, Oregon does not have, in fact, Rhode Island is the only state with an official state appetizer. With calamari, and we have a state nut, a state mushroom, and a state fruit. That's all we have for food, as it were, that are state
Well,
items.
During the next legislative session, now you know what to do. Come up with a state
appetizer.
There you go. Well, her granddaughter says her recovery from the Spanish flu may have something to do with her recovery from COVID-19. A 107-year-old New Jersey woman who survived the Spanish flu has reportedly defied the odds once again by surviving the coronavirus. And did I mention she's 107? Anna Del Priore was diagnosed with COVID-19 in May, recovered in June, the Asbury Park Press reported. Not only has she kicked the virus, but it's still on her feet and continuing to stay active by walking and dancing, according to the staff at the Brighton Gardens assisted living facility in Middletown, New Jersey. People don't believe me, says Laura Hale, Del Priori's healthcare coordinator at the facility. It's really been amazing to watch her journey. Well, Del Priori was born the same year as the sinking of the Titanic. She became infected with the Spanish flu during the pandemic in 1918 when she was 6 years old. Her granddaughter, Darlene Jasmine, suspects Del Priori's recovery from the Spanish flu, which is similar to COVID-19 because it also attacks the respiratory system, may have something to do with her recovery. Del Priori's 105-year-old sister, Helen Guzon, has also survived both illnesses. After she became infected with COVID-19, Del Priori had a fever, didn't eat much, but she didn't need a respirator and didn't have to go to the hospital. She's constantly moving, says the granddaughter. We always walked in Brooklyn to the grocery store, to the bakery, even every night she would make a homemade meal from scratch, all Mediterranean food, olive oil, vegetables, fruits, nuts. It's like old peasant food that now they charge you so much for. Well, the senior living facility, which operates Brighton Gardens, says that Del Priori and her late husband, Frank, a professional tango dancer, loved to dance. Meanwhile, She will turn 108 in September, says she has no plans to slow down. You keep living, she said. Dancing makes you feel good. I want to keep my health. So there you have it. Hey, we're going to take a break. You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show. We'll be back with another look at the lighter side of the news.
You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show podcast. It's aired on 93.9 KPDQ.
We're back. If you're listening to The Georgene Rice Show, we're taking a look at some of the lighter side of the news. Later in the second hour, we'll hear from Ron Price, author of Play Nice in Your Sandbox at Home. So stay with us. James Blend has joined me to take a look at some of the lighter side of the news. Well, apparently the flow of coins through the U.S. economy is the latest victim of the coronavirus pandemic. And now the government's asking people to spare a little change to balance out the supply. Well, restrictions have meant that stores are doing less business and fewer coins are being spent, bunching up the normal flow of quarters, dimes, and nickels. The problem is the circulation stopped because stores were closed, banks were closed. The Federal Reserve Chair, Jerome Powell, told journalists this week. Well, as a result, the government has asked people to start parting with their change, either by spending it or cashing it in at banks. It noted that the lopsided flow is a problem because not everybody pays with bank cards or other touchless options that have surged as people tried to keep their hands clean during the outbreak. For millions of Americans, cash is the only form of payment, and cash transactions rely on coins to make change. That's what the United States Mint coin maker said last week. Well, the Mint said it is on track to make 1.6 billion coins a month until the end of the year, a boost over its average production of 1 billion per month. The coin supply problem can be solved with each of us doing our part. That's spending them or cashing them in. Powell also said the government has created a coin task force to tackle the problem. A coin task force. Wow, that sounds pretty serious. Sioux Falls, South Dakota. They're mourning the brief life of an urban corn stalk. Well, this lone stalk was growing up through a crack in the concrete before someone came along and ripped it out of the street. Well, apparently residents of South Dakota's largest city are mourning that urban corn stalk that briefly became a lighthearted beacon of hope during the coronavirus pandemic. Well, the Argus Leader, their local paper Wednesday, said that the stock had been growing up through a crack in the concrete at the intersection of 57th and Minnesota Avenue on Sioux Falls' south side. It was dubbed the 57th Street Corn, complete with its own Twitter account during its brief lifespan. The plant was a symbol of resiliency and of hope as the pandemic rages on. That's a quote from the mayor, Paul Tinhacken. Well, finding joy in the small things will continue to help us get through what has been a challenging time in our country, the mayor said. It was amazing to see the community rally around the 57th Street corn as a sign of hope over the past days. Well, residents reported Wednesday morning that someone had ripped out the lone stalk, prompting an outcry on social media. Someone attached a sign to a traffic post where the stalk grew that read, "Corn Rip," or "Rest in peace." Well, the Stockyards Ag Experience, a group working to transform the city's vacant stockyards into an interactive experience, is selling T-shirts commemorating the now fallen stock. How desperate do people have to be that this is a big deal?
It really shows the level of boredom that we have gotten to.
It really does. I mean, it wasn't any more than maybe 12 inches tall, but still. While a Swiss town has been coated in cocoa powder after a factory glitch, it snowed particles of fine powder. After the ventilation system at the Lindt chocolate factory malfunctioned. Now, that's a malfunction I can get behind.
I love Lindt chocolate, for the record. If anybody ever wants to know what to get me for a special occasion, I love their truffles. Woo!
Just saying?
Just saying.
Yeah. Residents of a Swiss town got a bit of a shock when it started snowing particles of fine chocolate. Now, there's something to rally around. After the ventilation system of a chocolate factory malfunctioned, the Lindt, and I think it's Sprugelini Company, something very like that, confirmed local reports Tuesday that there was a minor defect in the cooling ventilation for the line of roasted cocoa nibs in the factory. The nibs fragrance of crushed cocoa beans are the basis of chocolate. Combined with strong winds on Friday morning, the powder spread around the immediate vicinity of the factory, leaving a fine cocoa dusting. And the company says one car was lightly coated and that It has been offering to pay for any cleaning needed, but hasn't yet been taken up on for the offer. The factory production was able to continue as normal, and the company says the particles were completely harmless to people or the environment. The ventilation system has now been repaired, and chocolate is no longer falling from the sky. Now, that, to me, would have been more exciting than a corn stalk, but that's just me.
Insurance rates, chocolate rain, makes us happy living in a gay chocolate rain.
I don't know that that song's ever been more appropriate in the
I don't know either.
13 years or so it's been around now.
13 years. That song still cracks me up.
Chocolate Rain, and it it finally happened, people. It
so
finally happened.
Prophet. He was a prophet and was able to see that 13 years in the future.
Taizan Day is a had a vision of the future, and it was in Switzerland.
Did you know that squirrels have been seen splooting? Well,
okay,
I didn't know.
Splooting?
I didn't know
that doesn't
meant.
Sound good.
what they're doing and why. But an animal is said to sploot when it lays flat on the ground or the floor or some other surface with its four legs spread widely. Splooting. You may have seen it in your dog or cat. But now across the country, people are observing the behavior in squirrels and chipmunks. And they're sharing those observations and their photos widely online. I'm not sure, again, we're bored, how interesting this is. But suddenly squirrel splooting is trending on social media simply because more people have time on their hands and they're spending some of that time watching wildlife in their backyards or in local parks. Well, squirrels and chipmunks have always splooted, as have rabbits and foxes and raccoons and many, many other creatures. Birds have their own version of the sploot. Squirrels also regularly sploot on tree branches. Well, prior to whole thing, Carolyn Mann, a Penn State, I think, Altoona biology professor who includes squirrels and chipmunk research in her work, wasn't familiar with the term splooting, which originated in the pet world rather than in the wildlife research. But she has observed the behavior in the squirrels she studies and believes that it's likely related to the animals wanting to cool themselves off. With summer heat holding sway across much of the country, squirrels and chipmunks have found plenty of need to escape overheating. Well, the professor noted that some animals and birds also do similar movements to remove skin parasites from themselves. And while squirrels and chipmunks have an array of behaviors, including splooting in their repertoire to escape the worst summer heat, they get most of the water they need from the food they eat. They will take a drink from any outdoor source they can reach, such as a bird bath, the pan of water on the ground, a mini pond or the like. And they will accompany that with splooting. So there you have it.
I tell you, I'm just glad to know the term finally, because you go on vacation for a couple of days with a five-year-old and you definitely find yourself splooting by the end of the day. It's like, oh, I'm so tired. I don't want to do anything. Sploot.
See that. That would trend on Facebook, I promise.
Oh, I'm sure it would.
Well, from gray squirrels to flying squirrels, there are more than 300 species of squirrels worldwide. For Squirrel Appreciation Day, here are some of the amazing things squirrels do. Now, I should mention that Squirrel Appreciation Day is September 26th, but we're just taking a look a bit early. Squirrels are problem solvers. A University of Exeter study has shown that gray squirrels are fast learners capable of adapting tactics to improve efficiency in locating food. They are problem solvers, and they can lie. Researchers monitoring gray squirrels in a 2008 study found the animals engaged in tactical deception. When a squirrel thought it was being watched by other squirrels, it would dig a fake hole and pretend to deposit a nut into it, but instead tuck the nut into its own cheeks and waited to bury it elsewhere where it wouldn't be discovered later. They have a fantastic dental plan, we're told. The four front teeth of squirrels' mouths never stop growing. which explains the squirrel's ability to cut through hard surfaces like nutshells, bark without grinding their, or cutting their teeth away because they're always growing. And those magnificent tails. A squirrel's tail performs an array of essential functions, a balance in climbing, a signal to other squirrels about potential dangers, an umbrella to shield the rest of the squirrels from rain, a wraparound blanket in cold weather, a rudder when swimming, all kinds of things. They can fly. They can run down trees. That amazing sense of smell they have has been observed finding food buried under a foot of snow. They still miss some despite their sense of smell. Squirrels don't recover all of their buried nuts in any given area. Some of those nuts sprout and grow trees. We have one in our yard that's probably 20 to 30 feet tall. That was a squirrel. They also spread mushrooms. We're talking about the beautiful life of a squirrel. They're great company. They're fun at bird feeders, although it can be a challenge if you're trying to feed birds. There are so many different species of them. As I mentioned, 300. They can be white. They can be black. They can be brown. They come in all kinds of colors. They can. They are prolific. Gray, fox, and red squirrels are mating now. Pregnant females will produce litters of 1 to 8 in 45 days or so, and they can be celebrated. Several North American towns have labeled themselves the home of the white squirrel and celebrate them in a variety of ways. And something not so celebrated, according to the website Cyber Squirrel One, which has compiled every public record of animals disrupting power services since 1987, squirrels have caused nearly twice as many disruptions as any other animals. Squirrels, 1,228 disruptions. Birds, 635. Snakes, 116. Raccoons, 114. Rats, 52. Cats, 26. Martins, 25. Jellyfish, 13. And monkeys, 12. So there you have it, the squirrel. You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show. We'll be back.
Hey, look out the window there.
It's a squirrel.
It's so cute.
You're listening to the Georgene Rice Show podcast. It's aired on 93.9 KPDQ.
If you're listening to the Georgene Rice Show, James Blend has joined me for all of this. Well, it was a bad week for Mexican tourism promotion, and it got even worse when the English language version of the country's tourism website appeared with hilarious mistranslations. Well, entire states like Hidalgo and Guerrero apparently got machine translated as noble and warrior. Worse, for the visitmexico.com site, there was systematic and inexplicable reinvention of the names of some fairly well-known tourist towns. The Caribbean resort of Tulum somehow became Jumpsuit. The nearby lagoon of Bacalar on the Caribbean coast was switched to the Gulf Coast state of Tabasco. Well, the snafu came one day after the U.S. State Department cited the high number of COVID-19 cases in Mexico for issuing a do not travel advisory for the country, its highest level of warning. Well, hours earlier, the resort of Acapulco was forced to pull anything goes tourism ads that showed people partying without masks and the words, "There are no rules." But the problems at visitmexico.com drew howls of hilarity and anger as well. The Pacific Coast resort of Puerto Escondido became Hidden Port, a literal translation, and the northern city of Torreon became Turret, which is kind of close. Well, some name changes were just inexplicable and appeared to have as much to do with invention as simple translation. The central Mexican town of Aculco somehow became I Blame, and the northern Gulf Coast city of Ciudad Madero became Log. Stop making Mexico look ridiculous. That's what the former president, Felipe Calderon, wrote on his Twitter account. Mexico's tourism department issued a statement apologizing for the apparently outsourced errors, but then made it sound like something sinister had been involved. The tourism department expresses its most sincere apologies to the public and users for the effects that have occurred on our website, Visit Mexico, the statement said. Moreover, we make it known that these acts aim to damage the image of the website and the department, and so therefore a criminal complaint has been filed and appropriate legal actions will be taken against those responsible. So if you are planning to travel to Mexico, once that's possible again, you might want to check out the names of the locations that you are considering. Meanwhile, Samir Anwar was playing with Legos in 2018. That was a couple of years ago, when he stuck a piece up his nose and it finally dislodged some 2 years later. The boy's father reportedly shined a light into his son's nose but couldn't see the Lego piece. A doctor told the New Zealand family that the Lego would soon work its way through the child's system and the outlet would be, well, obvious, but it never did. Well, since then, we are happy and confident that they didn't have any in his nose. That's what the said. But the boy kept complaining days later, saying there was something in his nose, per the report. Well, 2 years later, the family was under the impression the Lego piece cleared the boy's system, well, months ago. However, this week, Samir was eating a muffin when the dusting of the top of the muffin irritated his nose. He started getting anxious again, and they said that they told him to just go and blow his nose. He did just that, and to the family's surprise, a black Lego hand dropped into the tissue. We were shocked. His eyes were wide open, and he was like, I love that, he was like, I found the Lego. I kept telling you that it was there, but you were saying that it was not. Well, the doctor recently gave Samir the final all clear. I was surprised and a bit scared, Samir told the outlet, saying he still is a huge Lego fan, was impressed that the piece had stayed together. If an object gets stuck in your child's nose, it's important to act quickly, according to pediatric emergency director of the Cleveland Clinic. Dr. Grover tells parents to make one attempt at removing the object and then consult a doctor right away. In some rare cases, the object can dislodge and cause choking. So it is important to do what you can. However, in this case, you pretty much stayed put. Well, the Girl Scouts of USA announced a new French toast-inspired cookie flavor to join their lineup of offerings in January, Toast-Jay. Cookies are called Toast-Jay. They're molded after the breakfast food favorite, featuring frosting-dipped biscuits shaped like mini French toast slices, Girl Scouts USA announced. The new cookies will only be available in select areas, but customers are encouraged to contact their local councils for information on availability. Now, does that appeal to you at all, James? A cookie that's inspired by French toast?
I mean, I like French toast and I like cookies. I don't know that it appeals to me, but I'd be willing to try it. It's not the worst food item you've mentioned on the show.
Yeah, I don't know why they would, of all the options that are available, why they would have chosen that. But this is what they said in their promotion. Amid challenging world events and a global pandemic this year, Girl Scouts created moments of joy by donating cookies to thank frontline workers and using the cookie earnings to support their communities. So they made them available by selling them? Anyway, they donated, but they used cookie earnings. It's not clear to me. Anyway, the press release announced the Toast-Jay cookies. When Girl Scout cookie season returns, Toast-Jay will give customers a new way to celebrate these moments alongside other favorites like Thin Mints, Samoas, and Caramel Delights. While the Girl Scouts had to pivot their beloved cookie-selling business, like many others, as a result of the coronavirus pandemic, relying more on digital sales instead of their traditional cookie stands earlier this year. To that end, Girl Scouts rolled out Girl Scout Cookie Care, an online vertical, allowing customers to place orders for home delivery and to donate cookies to frontline workers and first responders. The platform, GSUSA, says they will continue to be vital to cookie sales and the distribution in 2021. I think I might pass on that one.
I'm
not much of a Girl Scout supporter these days, but that doesn't appeal at all.
I don't think it does. I mean, if somebody handed me an extra, I might try it, but I'm not going to go out of my way to have one.
Yeah. Well, have you ever heard of Otto Brewery syndrome? It's a rare condition. It involves excessive fungal growth in the gut. Well, one man was feeling drunk all the time, even though he didn't drink any alcohol. He's 47 years old. He had what they call gut fermentation syndrome. It's also known as Otto Brewery syndrome. It's pretty rare, but it involves excessive fungal growth in the gut, and it feeds on carbohydrates and then fuels ethanol production. Oftentimes, it's linked to an excessive amount of yeast in the gut. Well, clinicians tried putting the patient on a low-carb diet and, of course, antifungals, but signs of intoxication persisted, according to this particular case study. Well, the intoxication was so chronic that the man even lost his driver's license after a random police check. Clinicians then looked at some transplantation to try to revive his gut, and he's doing much better now. But just self-imposed, self-producing alcohol in the gut, and he appeared to be intoxicated. This was a kind of a case study, and hopefully they're going to come up with some solution for that in the future. But you can be intoxicated without consuming alcohol if you have this condition.
But, I mean, on the plus side, he was a real fun guy.
Well, there is that. Hey, we need to take a break. Up next, we're going to hear from traffic. And what do we got? News coming up. And then we'll take a look at some of the day's headlines and share our interview with Ron Price. Play nice in your sandbox at home. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Georgene Rice Show podcast. It's aired on 93.9 KPDQ.
Hey, welcome back. You're listening to the second hour of the Georgene Rice Show. Coming up, we'll hear an interview of the week. Ron Price, author of Play Nice in Your Sandbox at Home, How to Enjoy Peaceful Relationship with the Important People in Your Life. So as we're quarantining in place, this might be encouraging and helpful. First, a look at some of the news. As expected, ex-FBI lawyer Kevin Kleinsmith pled guilty in the Dunham probe, and Attorney General William Barr announced 1,000 arrests, 200 charged with federal crimes in Operation Legend Sweep. The Democratic National Convention has now ended, but on day three, revenge of Obama. This was Kamala Harris night, but like all nights of the DNC, it was primarily about hating Donald Trump with few details about what an Biden administration would look like. And Democrats adopted a radical but evidently not radical enough party platform amid some leftist dissent. And Muslim delegates assembly omits under God from the Pledge of Allegiance. Well, Stephen Bannon has been arrested, charged with fraud by New York prosecutors. He has pled not guilty. And a judge has thrown out Trump's challenge to the Manhattan DA subpoena for his tax records. And there's bad blood. Multimillionaire Obamas haven't donated to Joe Biden's campaign. Some speculate, maybe they don't support him. That's speculation, however. Not all misinformation is equal. Twitter says viral mailbox misinformation doesn't violate the company's policy. So that's apparently okay. And Portland police chief has pled for an end to the endless destruction as 200 rioters set fire in the streets and attempted to storm the ICE building on Thursday. The death toll has risen to an estimated 30 victims since mostly peaceful protests began. Goodyear endorses Black Lives Matter, bans employees from saying Blue Lives Matter, and there's been some backlash. And Facebook has removed the organizations and movements that have demonstrated significant risk to public safety, including some who may identify as Antifa. And the U.S. Intends to trigger snapback of U.N. sanctions on Iran. Good luck with that. And a new phase, fatality rates fall as treatments improved with regard to COVID-19. And asymptomatic kids may be more contagious than severely ill adults, we're learning, according to a new study. Firearm manufacturers are concerned a Trump reelection could hurt sales, hesitant to increase production with the skyrocketing demands. And Apple has become the first U.S. company to reach a $2 trillion market cap. Chicago's mayor has added Mississippi to the list of states she now blames for her city's violence problem. And a study suggests horrifying rise in domestic violence during the pandemic. Well, Joe Biden last night on the fourth and final day of the DNC convention accepted his party's nomination. Trump was not far behind, of course. It was a glowing speech, short on policy details, but much more about unity, as has been the theme throughout. For the Republicans, their convention starts on Monday, and the delegates will be present. It's not altogether clear how this is going to be done, but it will be quite different from the virtual convention seen by the Democrats. Republicans were quite critical. Now it's their turn to prove that a virtual convention, if you will, can work. Meanwhile, Chris Wallace, host of Fox News Sunday, labeled Joe Biden's nomination acceptance speech Thursday night as enormously effective, saying the address blew a big hole in President Trump's claims that Biden's cognitive skills are declining. Remember, Donald Trump has been talking for months about Joe Biden as being mentally shot, a captive of the left, Wallace said during a Fox News special coverage of the convention. And yes, Biden was reading from the teleprompter and a prepared speech, but I thought that he blew a hole, a big hole, in that characterization. It seems to me that after tonight, he went on to say, Donald Trump will have to run against a candidate, not a caricature. After Biden finished his remarks, in which he promised to restore the soul of America and deliver the nation from darkness, Fox News chief political anchor Brett Baer said Biden was the best he's been during the topsy-turvy campaign. in a controlled environment, reading from a teleprompter. That's one thing out in a debate and on the campaign trail, which, by the way, he failed to do today. Generally, after a convention, you see the candidate out and in at least on the news, if not in public. That was not the case for Joe Biden. Meanwhile, Laura Ingraham, she wrapped up the Democratic convention saying the party has learned nothing since 2016. Tucker Carlson said the DNC speakers of the speakers, Biden's campaign makes up a coalition of the miserable. Teens followed Biden's advice on living with a stutter and was invited to deliver a rousing DNC speech. And Sean Hannity asked Kamala Harris, what do you really see in your running mate? We'll leave that an unanswered question. Well, the assault suspect, Marquise Love, 25, has now been captured, and police identified him as the person who knocked another man unconscious during violent demonstrations last Sunday. Love apparently took to social media to beg for financial help as he remained at large. The suspect, who goes by the name Keese Love, was wanted by police for allegedly attacking a man identified as Adam Hanner just blocks away from a Black Lives Matter demonstration. In a post on Snapchat, Love insisted he did nothing wrong, might go to jail for murder tonight for a racist when all I did was fight him, Love purportedly wrote according to an image obtained by The Sun. Look it up on Twitter, put money on my books, and come see me. Well, video footage of the attack shows someone resembling Love kicking Hainer in the face as the victim kneels in the street. Hainer's girlfriend said the couple were in the truck when he spotted a woman being mugged and stopped to help. An angry mob then set upon the couple. Hainer got back in his truck, drove away, but stopped when his power steering failed, leading to another encounter with the mob. Well, Portland protest press seems is seen in video footage actually throwing objects at police, one reporter says, and a fire was set inside Portland's Multnomah building during unrest and riots was declared once again. Julia Louis-Dreyfus was panned as tone-deaf as the DNC's host compared to Clint Eastwood's empty chair moment, and wildfires raging through Northern California have caused at least five deaths. In other news, Nancy Pelosi has rejected calls to extend the coronavirus unemployment relief benefit with a smaller bill, and Goodyear has clarified its policy on the MAGA pro-police gear after Trump's boycott call was apparently effective. And Lori Lightfoot defended herself in that she has some banned protests on her particular block, saying, I have a right to make sure that my house is secure. Dan Proft says she has a right to expect and direct police to protect her home, but Chicago businesses and residents don't have a right to the same expectation. Also, I thought all protesters were peaceful, but for a few who hijacked the expression of their grievance, why the concern? Amy Swearer points out that the security of her home will be enforced by armed police officers, and tomorrow she'll probably explain to the rest of Chicago residents why it should be harder for them to secure their own homes and businesses with firearms because they're merely lowly citizens. And Steve Bannon has been arrested and charged with fraud. The principal scheme for accomplishing this allegedly involved payments about $1 million in We Build the Wall funds to another nonprofit that Bannon controlled. He has since pled not guilty to those charges. And a California judge has blocked the order forcing Uber and Lyft to classify drivers as employees, at least for the time being. And a California governor never took the pay cut that he promised. His staff said it was just an administrative error. And a documentary blames fat stigma on racism. We are told whenever people start trafficking in fat phobia, they are inherently picking up on those historical forms of oppression. So apparently they're linked in ways you may not have seen. Meanwhile, Portland businesses are bailing on the city. Businesses are leaving. Andrew Hone, president and CEO of the Portland Business Alliance, says the financial consequences to the downtown corridor are a running calculation that is almost impossible to wrap your mind around, he said, with one company already saying the riots have cost $20 million in damage and lost business. And while national media has ignored the violence in the cities, local media in Seattle have been harassed by the thugs. Michael Bloomberg spent $936 million for a forgettable retread of his 2016 speech, the Washington Examiner says. And the DNC featured rapper who has ties to the Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan, who is himself a racist. Well, the cash-strapped USPS killed a profitable custom stamp program over the Jesus stamp. And the National Susan B. Anthony Museum has rejected the president's pardon somehow. Trump is keeping his distance from Bannon after his indictment. We'll continue to follow that story. Hey, you're listening to The Georgene Rice Show. In 1609, Galileo Galilei demonstrated his new telescope to a group of officials atop the Campanile of Venice. 1831, Nat Turner launches a violent slave rebellion in Virginia, resulting in the deaths of some 55 whites. 1858, the Lincoln-Douglas debates began between Illinois senatorial campaign rivals Abraham Lincoln, a Republican, and Stephen Douglas, a Democrat. 1859, Hawaii becomes the 50th state in the United States. And on this day in history, 1980, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, which would become the world's largest animal rights organization with 9 affiliates and more than 6.5 million members and supporters worldwide, is founded in Tacoma Park, Maryland. Finally, 2000, rescue efforts to reach the sunken Russian nuclear submarine Kursk end with divers announcing none of the 118 sailors had survived. Up next, we'll hear our interview of the week with Ron Price. Play nice in your sandbox at home. How to enjoy peaceful relationships with the important people in your life. You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show.
You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show podcast. It's aired on 93.9 KPDQ.
You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show. Now, it's been, what, 5-6 months that we've all been on lockdown. And my next guest makes the point, rightly so, that marriages are under some strain. Far too many couples from the very beginning have a false image of marriage. Either we think we're going to have to grin and bear it and just kind of put up with the hard times, or it's going to be that nonstop bliss that you see on television. Well, it's neither of those things. At some couples find themselves locked in tight quarters with their spouse and kids for weeks, as we have been. Some are starting to lose it, fight and bicker, or even resort to domestic violence. Well, one thing for certain, one's character is inevitably revealed in times of stress and crisis. I think we're all seeing that today. Well, the author of Play Nice in Your Sandbox at Home, How to Enjoy Peaceful Relationships with the Most Important People in Your Life, my guest has seen it all. He provides clearly defined guidelines for how to resolve conflict in marriage. And he talks about the value of playing together, investing in one another, in dealing with anger, showing appreciation, and seeing marriage as a team sport. Well, Ron Price owns and operates Productive Outcomes, Inc., where he provides mediation and life marriage coaching, along with workplace training and public speaking services. His book is one that I would recommend for all of us who are sheltering in place and want to do so in a way that when we look back, we can be grateful for the time that we grew closer together rather than farther apart through the strain. Ron Price, thank you so much for joining us.
Georgina, it's my pleasure. And that was such a nice introduction. I don't want to add anything. I don't want to risk taking away from what you just said. No, well, thank you. Thank you for those gracious words.
Oh, you're so very welcome. You know, this is a stressful season. My husband and I are sheltering here in our home. I'm working from home. We take care of my 89-year-old mother from home. Everything seems to be centered here. And it's an environment that on the one hand, we're thoroughly enjoying. On the other hand, it does place some strain. Can you describe for us what some of the challenges are that we face when our circumstances change so dramatically and you add to that a bit of uncertainty?
Well, uncertainty and extra time together, Jordine, you're absolutely right. You know, let me tell you really quickly, though, why marriages are a challenge. Why so often we have difficulty in marriage? May I tell your listeners that? It's because you married a human being. That was the first mistake you made. You married an imperfect human being. I don't know what you were thinking. But no, seriously, though, if you take two imperfect people and then you add other little imperfect people to the mix and expect that there's never going to be an unpleasant word or an uncomfortable situation, that's just not realistic. Just not realistic. So in the best of families, there will be moments of discord, disharmony, whatever you want to call it. So now, like you just said, you add the extra stress, the uncertainty, and we're together even more. Oh yeah, that's absolutely a ripe environment for some ugliness, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Now, you use the analogy of a sandbox, and it seems so entirely appropriate. How did that image come to your head in explaining, you know, the fact that we're all living together in a common environment where maybe the ground underneath us doesn't feel quite as firm as we'd hope?
Yeah. You know, people ask me, where did you grow up? I say, I'm trying to do it in Farmington, New Mexico. I don't ever want to grow up, Georgine. I want to be an adult. I want to be responsible for myself. But anything that brings us back to the carefree days of childhood, at least the relatively carefree days where we had to learn how to get along. We had to play well together. We had to share our toys, different things like that. It just seemed like a nice analogy to me. And then God gave me the Play Nice acronym. The Play is a four-step model to prevent trivial matters from blowing up on you and getting out of hand. The Nice is a four-step model to resolve significant differences that you're bound to have from time to time. So play nice in your sandbox. There you go.
I love the title. I think it's fairly common for the common courtesies that we extend to strangers to get lost in our marriages. It's as if we take a deep breath when we walk through the door. I don't have to be kind. I don't have to be generous. I don't have to be. I'm tired. I just want to be left alone and be thoroughly myself, which isn't always that pleasant. Why is it that in these environments that we're with the people that we love the dearest, that we're closest to, that we tend to, I don't know, let down a little bit?
Yeah, there's a couple of things there, Georgine. Number one, it's a fact of life. Hurting people are going to hurt people. If I'm upset, if I'm angry about something, if I'm frustrated, I'm going to take that out on somebody else. I just am. And I'm probably not going to get in my car, drive across town looking for somebody to take it out on. I'm going to take it on whoever's in striking distance, which most of the time is going to be family members. And so that's why that old song that our parents' generation sang, "You always hurt the ones you love."
Yeah.
Or maybe our grandparents' generation. But it's true, because they're there when you're not at your best. If you're not careful, yeah, you can say something you'll later wish you hadn't said. Well, God forbid, you can do something you'll later on wish you hadn't done. These are tense times. But Georgine, that's almost an excuse, if you will. There's always tense times. There's always difficulties. I think Charles Dickens said it so well. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. That's true for every one of us all the time.
Yeah.
Georgine, I bet right now, it is. I bet right now in your life, some things are going real well. You wouldn't change a thing. Other areas could probably stand some improvement. Am I right on that?
Have you been reading my diary?
Hey, now. I'll take that as a yes.
Yes. That's a yes.
But it is. It's true for all of us. So we do. We have to be careful when we're in a store, when we're out in public. I think we have that extra measure of, people might be watching and we kind of care about our reputation or whatever. So we're on guard and we say please and thank you. But then we get home and we think, well, maybe that's not so important. We take each other for granted, which is a huge mistake. Huge mistake.
Yeah. So how do we avoid that? Obviously, there has to be that deep breath taken where your shoulders are relaxed again. But how do we avoid not playing nice in our own sandbox where it's most important?
Yeah. Well, we make sure that we're playing together. We're having fun together on a regular basis, because along with common courtesies, another area that gets neglected is having fun. You know, when couples first meet, they're attracted to each other and they talk with each other and they do things together. And then they say, oh, let's do this forever. And they continue to have fun for a while. But then after a time, life gets busy. You know, life becomes all about raising the kids and paying the bills, or is it paying the kids and raising the bills? One of those two.
Little of both.
But a little of both. But you know what I'm saying? Life gets busy and fun gets pushed to the wayside in too many families. You need to be determined about it. You need to be intentional. That's one of my favorite words.
Yes.
When we're talking about marriage, don't just put it on autopilot and expect it to be fine. I hate the expression marriage takes work. Georgine, I work for a living. I work all day. I don't want to think I have to go home and work all night. But it takes paying attention, being focused, being intentional, choosing to have the marriage that you want. And playing is a huge part of that. Another is look for the good. You have to force yourself now and then to look for the good qualities in your mate, because they're there. So are the negatives. Those are easy to see. But the L chapter in the play model is look for the good. Make sure you're observing positive behavior and you're letting your mate or your children know, hey, I appreciate that. Thank you. That means a lot. You know, you do that, you're going to see more of it. You're going to see more of it.
We're talking with Ron Price, and we're talking about his book, Play Nice in Your Sandbox at Home, How to Enjoy Peaceful Relationships with the Important People in Your Life. I need to take a quick break, but we're going to continue that conversation. And let me encourage you, this is a book that just might help you through this season and in the seasons ahead when life returns to what we hope will be somewhat normal. You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show. We'll be back shortly.
You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show podcast. It's aired on 93.9 KPDQ.
Hey, welcome back. You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show. I'm continuing my conversation with Ron Price. He is the author of Play Nice in Your Sandbox at Home. I think I need to repeat that because for some of us, we need to be reminded, you know, this is my sandbox at home. Play nice. We were talking just before the break about how to go about that. And one of the things I think when we have been offended, when things haven't gone well, we have heard the phrase, just forgive and forget. You say that that's unrealistic. What do we do when we have been offended, when things are going rough with that baggage that we tend to carry with us? What's the right approach if forgive and forget isn't?
Well, I love the forgive part, Georgine. Yeah. Don't get me wrong on that. Forgive is wonderful. It's the forgetting part that I have an issue with. I often challenge people, think back to your second grade, first or second grade teacher, and raise your hand when you have the name or the picture that you have the face of your first or second grade teacher. And Georgine, most hands go up within just a few seconds.
Yes.
And then I ask, all right, when was the last time you thought about your first or second grade teacher? And they go, oh, it's been years. But look how quick you were able to recall. God created our minds, Georgine, in such a way that we remember everything. But to say forgive and forget, short of brain damage, and I'm not making a joke there. Some people know if you've had a traumatic brain injury, yeah, your memory could be unreliable and you might be able to forget things. But other than that, you just can't do it. So let's replace it with forgive and move on.
Mm-hmm.
Forgive and move on. Or here's a quick story. Let me share about a lady who had been offended by a fellow church member. And she was visiting with another friend about it. And she said, you know, I decided to forgive her. And the friend said, forgive her? Don't you remember what she did to you? And the lady said, no, I specifically remember forgetting that. Isn't that great? I specifically remember forgetting that. So don't try to forgive and forget. You can't do it. Forgive and move on, because the enemy will bring thoughts to your mind. You know that.
Absolutely.
He'll keep throwing it into the forefront of your mind, and you can say, you know what? Forgive and move on.
Okay, well, I've got a better suggestion. There you go. Let's do this. Okay. I'm just going to change my mate. I'm just going to set about changing my mate. How successful am I likely to be with that?
Forgive me. I'm not supposed to laugh at the host, am I? But boy, how common is that, Georgine? How common is that? I saw something on the Today Show years ago. In fact, I write about this in the book. I was at work. I just finished breakfast. I was getting ready to settle down and start doing some work, and happened to have the Today Show on, and they said, oh, in our next segment, we're going to have an animal trainer who's going to share with us how she used animal training techniques to change her husband. And I said, oh, this is going to be good.
Yeah.
So I hung around for a few moments, and the lady comes on. I can't remember her name, but she comes on and she says, you know, when you're training animals, you look for the behavior that you want. You look for them to do the right thing, and you lavish praise on them. You reward them. You let them know how much you appreciate that behavior. She said, I started doing that with my husband. When he did things that I liked, oh, I just went out of my, oh, thank you. Oh, you're wonderful. Oh, I appreciate that. And she said, and you know what? He began to change. But Georgine, then she looked right in the camera and said, oh, was it me who had changed?
Exactly.
Oh, and I started to do a dance. I'm in my office dancing. She got it. Don't What was it? Gandhi said, be the change you want to see in the world. How about be the change you want to see in your marriage? How's that sound?
Yeah, I like it. I like it. You have in the book the acronym HALT, and each letter stands for something that might contribute to the way we respond to our loved ones. Talk about the acronym HALT and how that can help us in perhaps avoiding problems.
Yeah, and I certainly didn't make this up, but it's hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. Again, Georgine, I don't know you. We're just meeting by phone right now. And it's great to be with you, by the way. Don't get me wrong. But I know that there are moments when you're not at your best. And that makes two of us in this conversation, in case you're wondering.
Yeah.
And if I'm hungry, if I'm upset, if I'm agitated about something else, you know, whatever, there can be all sorts of reasons that, again, I'm just not going to be at my best. And if I have to interact with my wife or children or others at that time, it's risky. It's dangerous. So that's why I advocate people call a timeout. When you know you're not at your best, call a timeout. But, Georgine, you have to call a timeout the right way. If you do it the wrong way, you're probably going to make it worse, not better. Can I take a moment or two and share the right way? Thank
Absolutely.
You. I was hoping you'd ask. You know, if you and I are having a heated discussion and I just say to you, that's it, time off, and I storm off, I'm not being fair to you, because I'm leaving you to wonder, well, wait a minute, is he coming back? Are we ever going to discuss this? Again, I should have picked a different example because you and I are not married. But let's say your husband did that. He stormed off. You're left to wonder, well, is he rejecting me? Is he rejecting the relationship? You don't know. So if you love him, which I know you do, you could go after him and say, wait a minute, let's talk. It's going to make him even more frustrated, so he's going to walk all the faster and further. All he has to do is say, you know what, hold on, time out. I'm too upset to talk right now, but I will be back in an hour, and we'll talk then. Or how about if we get together at 2 o'clock and we talk then? Or how about 7 o'clock? So they call a timeout, but they establish the time in. You let the other person know, we will talk about this, just not right now. Mm-hmm. You can say one of two things to another adult, Georgine. You can say, I need a timeout, or we need a timeout. I suggest you never say to another adult, you need a timeout. I think you'll find out how much they really do.
Yeah, whether or not they do, this is not a good way to go
they will then, yeah. But so if you call the timeout, you are responsible to schedule the time in. That way it's timeout, not cop out. If it's an important issue to somebody who's important to you, you have the right to say, I won't talk to you about this right now. You do not have the right to say, I don't ever want to talk to you about this. That's not how relationships are supposed to function.
That's so good. You write about, in fact, I'm going to quote you, if you are in a relationship where escalation occurs frequently and regularly, your relationship is in serious trouble. First of all, describe escalation. And I think during this season, we're seeing numbers where that's the case. Describe what that means and what should be done in that sort of situation.
Yeah, that's a great question, Georgina, especially to follow what we were just talking about.
Yeah.
Thank you. Escalation is where little things become big things. I didn't like it when you did that. Oh, yeah. Well, what about you? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then before you know it, I don't know what it is we're talking about, but it probably has nothing whatsoever to do with whatever started the conversation in the first place. Now, Georgine, how long have you and your husband, Don, been married?
38 years.
All right. Then you have escalated in your time. We get you by 1 year. My wife and I are going to hit 40 in December, so we're 39
congratulations.
Years. Thank you, and right back at you. But any couple who's been married any length of time has escalated at some point in their relationship.
Yes.
It's human. It's going to happen. And as long as it's now and then, come on. Again, it just means you married a human being, and so did they. But again, if you're in a relationship where every little thing blossoms, gets out of hand, it's going to steal your joy, it's going to steal your energy, and it's going to sicken your relationship. The late Gary Smalley called what I write about the five germs. I got them from an organization in Denver, Prep Inc. Dr. Smalley called them germs that will infect and kill off a relationship, any relationship, certainly a marriage. And escalation is one of them. So, again, you can probably guess, calling a timeout. If you see you're starting to escalate, call a timeout. Or another technique, I didn't write about this in the book, but I've been espousing it recently. Be disruptive.
Okay, you're going to have to define that now, one.
Yeah, I know, because Georgina, I used to get into a lot of trouble as a child for being disruptive, and now I advocate it. But let's say you and your husband, again, I'll use you as an example if you don't mind.
Please.
You're having again an argument, a discussion that is not pleasant. It's not going in the right direction. All you have to do is say, hold on, time out. I all of a sudden need some fresh air. How about if we go for a walk? And let's talk about this on the way. You're disrupting the negative interaction. You're disrupting the pattern. And then once you get outside, you can do what I wrote about the speaker-listener technique. You can say, hey, we need to understand each other. You go first. Talk to me civilly, please. Make it easy for me to understand you. But I'm going to listen to you, and then hopefully you'll return the favor. Or you're having an argument with a teenage child, and you say, you know what, hold on. I all of a sudden have a hankering for an ice cream cone. How about if we drive down and get us an ice cream cone? Again, you're disrupting, breaking the negative cycle. You get in the car and say, hey, all right, we got to understand each other. You go first. Talk to me. So it's kind of a conversation do-over, if you will. But yeah, what happens is we just let the negative interactions run their course, and their course is usually in a bad direction.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's so much more in Plain Ice in Your Sandbox at Home that time does not permit us to talk about. But I want our listeners to know that you offer chapter challenges, you offer calls to action, a framework for marriage that are under stress and de-stress, and you offer great advice and encouragement on how to keep your love alive even in times of uncertainty and how to have fun in the midst of it all. Once again, the book is titled Play Nice in Your Sandbox at Home, How to Enjoy Peaceful Relationships with the Important People in Your Life. Book available online. How can our listeners get a copy? They need it today.
It is online. It's at Amazon for sure. But Georgine, I got one other item I'd like to offer your listeners. I've recently put together how to protect your relationship from five common but destructive behaviors. And it's a simple PDF, but I'd like to make that available. If anybody sends me an email, ron@playniceinyoursandbox.com, ron@playniceinyoursandbox.com. I'll shoot that off to you. But again, there are behaviors that we do in marriage that if we realized it and recognized them, had a name to give to them, yeah, we'd be in a much better position to stop them, turn them around, and make things better.
Move forward.
Marriage will
joy.
Always be challenging, but it doesn't have to be as hard as we sometimes make it.
Yeah. Ron Price, thank you so much. I look forward to our next conversation. I'm sure we'll have one.
I hope so, Georgine. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Again, Ron
Bye-bye.
Price, Play Nice in Your Sandbox at Home. And you can take advantage of that PDF that he offered, playniceinyoursandbox.org. You're listening to The Georgine Rice Show. We'll be back in a moment to wrap things up.
You're listening to The Georgine Rice Show podcast. It's aired on 93.9 KPDQ.
Hey, welcome to the final segment of The Georgine Rice Show. We mentioned earlier in the program that Oregon students from kindergarten to high school seniors will not see the inside of a classroom or receive in-person instruction unless the state can substantially curb the spread of COVID-19 in the next 200 days. Now, 200 days, that's a very long time. This is according to the press conference held earlier today by Governor Kate Ground. The state has essentially flattened the rate of infection and test positivity, but the governor said Oregon has yet to begin trending downward as of the latest Oregon Health Authority update. 5.4% of tests are coming back positive, and the state is seeing an infection rate of 50 per 100,000 residents. The governor said, unfortunately, it's still not enough. Our infection rate is still too high to get our kids safely back into the classroom in most of our schools this fall. Well, in order for schools to reopen, test positivity must be 5% or lower and 10 cases per 100,000 residents or lower, according to state officials. Now, the school district officials across the state have spent the summer cobbling together reopening plans. what some superintendents and parents describe as a whiplash-inducing series of changes handed down from the Oregon Department of Education, this being the latest. Well, many Portland area districts announced their students will not receive any in-person instruction until at least November. Only largely rural districts put out plans to start younger children, primarily those in kindergarten, first and second, as well as third grade classrooms, some as early as the 31st of this month. Also, the governor said if she doesn't see improvement in slowing the spread of COVID-19 across the state, she's going to be implementing more restrictions. During a press conference, she threatened that restrictions could be on businesses like bars and restaurants, as well as travelers coming in from hotspots. She said she's considering adding the restrictions by the end of the month, but there was no hard date for that. We're doing well, but we have to do better. We're on the right track now. We need to step on the gas, Oregon Health Authority Director Patrick Allen said during that press conference. And the state epidemiologist, Dr. Dean Seidlinger, also spoke, outlining various scenarios over the next 4 months, or rather 4 weeks. He said all the modeling shows we are headed in the right direction. Oregonians have flattened the curve again, but we're still months away from driving infection rates to levels where we can open schools. Given the formula that they've given, it seems almost impossible that schools will be open in 2021. But we'll see what actually happens. But there will be no in-person classrooms in the state of Oregon for the foreseeable future. Well, if you're feeling a little bit down by all of that, they tell us that smiling more often, even faking it, tricks your brain into feeling happy. This is according to a new study. Can a smile truly make everything better? Well, this new study finds that even if you don't feel like smiling, faking one can have positive impacts. Now, researchers say smiling triggers certain facial muscles, which can trick your brain into feeling more positive. Now, the study is by the University of South Australia, and it examines participants holding a pen between their teeth, you know, and mimicking a smile, forcing their face to use the same muscles as a smile. Well, the experiment reveals that this movement alters both facial and body expressions, which generates more uplifting emotions. When your muscles say you're happy, you're more likely to see the world around you in a positive way, even in a pandemic, apparently. So, James, have you been smiling enough to get your way through this this pandemic?
I've been doing this wrong. I thought if you're happy and you know it, you're supposed to clap your hands. It's one of those things. Having a 5-year-old smiling around here is kind of mandatory. There was a couple of days ago I had asked for a hug and it was denied.
What had you done, Dad?
Asked for one too many hugs, apparently. Because that's the thing. It's like, I gave you a hug yesterday. What? Yeah, that's today's today.
There's a quota.
And so I give a frowny face, and she just comes over, grabs both sides of my cheek by my lips, and pushes upward. Smile, smile, smile. No frowning.
And, so she apparently knows the science.
So apparently she knows the science. I didn't. And so, yeah, that's when she gets a really, really, really fake smile.
Well, the scientist says that in our research, we found that when you forcefully practice smiling, it stimulates the something the emotional center of the brain, which releases neurotransmitters to encourage an emotionally positive state, the artificial cognition expert explains. So even the artificial stuff. For mental health, this has interesting implications. She goes on to say, if we can trick the brain into perceiving stimuli as happy, then we can potentially use this mechanism to help boost mental health. So let's try to do the remainder of this segment with a smile on our face and see what happens.
I like that idea. That's so much fun.
The Australian team is replicating a covert smiling experiment from 2009, which also evaluates how people perceive someone's facial reactions. Using the same pin in the teeth trick, researchers study how people view various reactions, spanning from frowns to big happy grins. Researchers even examine the difference in images of people walking sadly or happy. Well, the researcher reveals that there seems to be a definite link between how we act and our perception of happiness. I tell you, he's really got me going. In a nutshell, perceptual and motor systems are intertwined when we emotionally process stimuli. How many times have I said that to you, James? A fake it till you make it approach could have more credit than we expect. And I say that with a smile.
That's so awesome.
I know, I'm feeling way better.
Oh, I am too. I think you know what may have happened, though? I think during that last break, I may have developed a fungi in my gut. That's making me way more happy than I ought to be.
So you're internally intoxicated. You're intoxicated with joy and happiness because of the smile on your face.
I'm just intoxicated in the Lord. That's it. I'm going with that because I don't want anybody sending emails and complaining.
There is scripture behind that, by the way.
There is.
Anyway, I guess the point is that we need to smile more, and that if we don't feel like smiling and we force a smile, then that our physiology will somehow emit a lighter feeling even when we do that. My face actually hurts right now from that forced smile, and I have plenty of reason to smile naturally, but there you have the science says we ought to be smiling more, and if we do so, we'll feel better, happier.
Wow.
Is your smile fading, James?
It is. It's the initial. It takes a lot to keep it going, you know?
Especially when it's not natural, when you're kind of forcing it. It actually can hurt after a short period of time. Anyway, smiling, that's the bottom line. We need to smile more and we'll feel better. Well, we're just about out of time. I want to thank James Blend for coming back from his vacation and serving as producer today, Clark Hilton for engineering, and Dan Rice for the use of his office. And thank you for making the Georgene Rice Show part of your day. I hope you'll take full advantage of opportunities online to fellowship in your own church or that of others so that we as the body of Christ can find encouragement from God's word and fellowship in times of worship. So try to find a place of worship over the weekend, and we'll come back together here on Monday. Have a great night.
Thanks for listening to the Georgene Rice Show podcast. If you'd like to download a podcast of the show or would like more information on today's guests, please visit the show at kpdq.com or on Facebook. Follow the show on Twitter at GRice Show and like us on Facebook. And join us live every weekday at 4 for more critical thinking for critical times on 93.9 KPDQ.